All right, we began our study in Hebrews chapter 12, beginning in verse 18, and we saw two mountains being described, Mount Zion and Mount Sinai, and we really tried to take a look at what was being said as the key concept of this. And the key concept is there that the holiness of God keeps man from basically allowing God to be a part of his life, because he will not allow sin within his presence. And that is described so uniquely and so beautifully and so powerfully in terms of the holiness of God and the sin of man, seen in the experience in Exodus 19, where God descends upon Mount Sinai. And the people cannot go up unless God calls them in a certain kind of way to go up. And they are not to be a part of God's presence because they can see him, but they can't be a part of his holiness because of the sin that's a part of their lives. Then we see a shift to where in this passage in verse 22, where it calls you and I to Mount Zion. And it says you and I are able to come to God because of the sprinkled blood of Christ on our lives. And now there is, if you read this passage, a beautiful passage, that is just nothing but a sense of God drawing us to himself, loving us, bringing us into his presence, perfecting us, taking us to places that we've never been before in terms of that holiness and that beauty, and taking us back to really the original intent, the whole thing, to where you and I can meet God face to face. And that's been provided for us. And then it explains it to us in verse 25 that you and I are to listen to what God has said to us now that we're in his presence, so that you and I can live in a way that allows our lives to live for those things that are eternal, not for things that are temporal. And that's what's being described in the last part of that section. Then beginning in chapter 13, it talks about how that living should be seen in our lives. And it speaks about letting love continue in our lives. We have understood what love is. We have come to taste love. We have been a part of love because of this experience of Mount Zion. Okay, and now this love, as we walk through our life, because we are with him, is to continue. Okay. And so we have seen some of the actions of that in the first four verses, and that's what we have looked at over the last few weeks. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers. Remember the prisoners as though you were with them, and how it is that you would want God to respond to you and other people to respond to you if you were in that condition. And then it talks about let the marriage be held in honor among all, and let the marriage bed be undefiled. For fornicators and adulterers God will judge. And we spent all last week on that verse. And this week we're going to be spending the whole time in verse 5, but not really. What we have in this particular verse is love again. It mentions love, but this time it's in the negative. Okay? It's the place where the negative comes in. We have several verses who are giving us the positive, what love should be, as examples. Now it explains to us what it shouldn't be, and then what it should be. Okay, and the idea is you and I are not to desire or love or pursue money. Okay. That is what it's basically saying. So if you're a person who's going to live for the eternal, certainly don't vest your life or cause yourself to love that which is not eternal, which in this case is money and all that money can do for a person. Okay. And then the other is, and opposite to that, is you're to find out and understand and live in contentment. Okay. And that's essentially what it's saying. So it's really the love of don't have the love of money, have the love of contentment. Okay? And so this is a kind of a paradox between the two of them. In other words, there is two, a negative and a positive, okay, in relationship to that. Now, when I studied this passage, I don't know, 2 months ago, I was just reading in my devotion, I ran across this verse 5. And I've studied contentment before, and I've studied the love of money before. Okay, but I've never seen this passage in close enough examination as to how it helped me define what contentment was. Okay, how it helped me reach contentment. And that's what we're going to try to look for. We're going to take these passages and we're going to go into them a bit and look at it and ask the question, what really is contentment? Okay, if we're to love contentment and not love money, and what is the love of money, and why it's told us we're not to do that, okay, and why are we supposed to seek this love of contentment? What is this? Okay, and what you find, there are four really big passages or strong passages in the New Testament that really help us unfold the issue of money and contentment. Okay, it's interesting to see, as I mentioned in this sheet, that this verse, and this verse all use love of money and contentment opposite of each other. And so you don't find the word contentment very often in the New Testament, but in all three of these verses, the word contentment is used, okay, these passages. And opposite is this sense of the love of money, okay? And so when you study it, that's what you find. Then you come to Matthew 6, 19 through 34, a very familiar passage. It has to do with anxiety, so it's not directly on contentment. But it does have, right opposite to it, the love of money. Okay, so the love of money is the thing that causes great anxiety. Okay, and so these are the passages that you find in the New Testament. If you want to sit down and study the issue of contentment, this is, or the love of money, this is the place to go. Okay, and I have actually studied these two passages, not this one that much, and not this one either, until I came across Hebrews 13. The reason it meant a lot to me was I was searching about 2 months ago for, I don't know how to describe this, but the anxiety or the sense of not being able to put things together had caused me to lose contentment, and it had to do with money. Okay, so I was dealing with money, and in this case, it was a completely different kind of feeling in terms of money. It was I had it, now I'm going to lose it. Okay, and I think when we get to our age, a lot of times we kind of stored up money, you know, to be able to live in the future. Okay, and you have that little bit of money that you've stored up, okay, and all of a sudden you realize that you've got to keep this stuff alive or you're not going to make it very well, okay, in relationship to what's going on. And many of us are in that kind of position. You have something that occurred to you, you know, some physical illness or something that happens to the kids, and you want to try to help them out of that particular problem, and you sit there and you go, I'd like to help them out of that problem, but I look at this over here and I go, I don't know if I can help them out of that problem, okay, or that kind of thing. All of a sudden, I was facing, in my opinion, at least I felt that way, not knowing how to present this to God, okay, not knowing how to get out from a sense of not being content, okay, or I can't quite describe it. It's just a restlessness, an unease, which is, of course, the opposite of contentment, okay, and it had directly to do with money, okay, and so I had to, what I was praying was, I don't like this, and I know it's wrong. I don't know what to do with it. Okay, it's smack dab in front of my face, and I can't walk around it or throw it over the top, you know, or not deal with it. I have to deal with it. Okay, and but my attitude and my feelings were not correct, and I needed something from God to help me get a hold of this better. And so I was praying about that, and I came across this verse 5 and 6 of chapter 13. and it really struck me. Okay? And let me just read it. Let your character be free from the love of money, being content with what you have. For he himself has said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. So we confidently say, the Lord is my helper, and I will not be afraid. What shall man do to me? Okay. Now, I never associated these two verses with contentment. Okay. This is what struck me in this passage. I never associated these two verses with contentment. Okay. I've studied the book of Proverbs. We've gone through it together in this class. And in that book, there's a lot said about money. And so I've learned a lot of principles in terms of the book of Proverbs about money, but not this principle. Okay, this was different. Okay, and then when I started studying it, I saw these two passages that was linked for me from commentaries, and I began to study those passages. And I began to get other principles and help in relationship to settling me down and getting me in the right position. Okay, I think the greatest principle, and I'll just tell you up front, that I immediately found in my study and understanding, it's not on these sheets right this yet, okay, is that I understood contentment to be an understanding if I moved to do something with money that essentially I could believe that God would take me any direction he wanted me to. In other words, the loss of it or the gain of it. Okay? And I should be content with either direction. And I wasn't. I was afraid of the loss. You understand? Okay? In other words, there was no contentment because I was afraid of the loss. And I wasn't wanting to live in the loss. Okay, I was wanting to live in the gain. I was okay with that. But I was not wanting to live in the loss. So I was not content. Now, that was the greatest understanding of my problem. Okay, I began to understand that's my problem. My problem was I did not want to lose it. Okay, it was a security for the future. And if I lost it, I'd lose the security. I don't care what you say. That is a deep, deep-seated problem. And I believe it's the love of money. And I think that most of us have a problem with this. All you have to do is touch it. You know, take it a little bit away, and all of a sudden you begin to feel that pressure. Okay, take a quite a bit of it away, and you don't just feel the pressure. You're discontent with life. Okay, and you're afraid of it. Okay, and that's essentially where you find yourself at. So I had to look at that, and I go, okay, what's my problem? That's my problem. Okay, if I take this, and I have to invest it or do something with it to keep it together. Okay, and if it starts falling apart, I am going to be very, very discontent. Okay, and essentially, that was the problem. Because this verse is basically telling you, you don't have contentment then, and you have a basic source of the love of money. Because all you got to do is touch it, and your insides start moving. Okay. And the stability it is brought to you, okay, is your love of it. That stability is your love of it. Okay? And you just watch. Just walk around, and you feel okay as long as everything is stable. And if you really ask the question, what's the stability that's keeping it all under control? The love, the money. It's what's keeping you under control. And all you have to do is bang on that with a sledgehammer and crack it a little bit, and all of a sudden you're not so good. And the first thing that you're doing is running around things in your mind all day long about you're going to lose it, you're going to lose it, you're going to lose it, and you're not going to make it. Okay? Now, for those who are very young, they have a real sense of these things too, but they really not gain much. So they don't have that, all that much to lose. And they feel like they got a long time to get it back. You and I, we don't feel that way, okay, in terms of what's going on. And what you really find is that your stability rests upon money. It truly rests upon, I don't know, maybe not you, but that's when I was dealing with this, I've known this, okay, but the trouble is that when you get certain situations to come along that actually threaten it, okay, then all of a sudden you realize that you're not content. And the contentment is the wanting or the willingness and the ability, okay, to live, okay, with the loss of it. Okay, whichever God chooses, you're content. Okay, and that's a major question. And usually in God's grace, he's not really hit you that hard. In other words, you're not threatened. But all you got to do is threaten it, and then all of a sudden you begin to realize how discontent you really are, and the love of money actually is holding it all together. So that's a problem. Okay? And this verse brings it up. Okay? It's basically saying, let the real love continue. Not the love of money, but the love that God gives to you that causes you to be content. Okay, so that's essentially what we see in this verse. Now, I don't know if I've explained this very well, okay, in terms of how, you know, where we are or where I am anyway. When I ran across that, I was struggling in this problem because I knew that my discontent was not right. And I knew that this danger of the money, okay, was a threat that was causing me inside real restlessness, okay, as to what, and to tell you the honest truth, that you can't, to me, I can't believe this is one of the issues that I found in my own life, that when this is causing me disquiet, my whole day's disquiet, okay, this is, and I wake up in the morning and say, God, take care of this, and I go through it the rest of the day, fine, I get up and say, God, take care of it, and 10 minutes later, after I walk out the door, I'm still in the condition. Okay, so it's a big thing to me. So I had to ask God, bring me something that enlightens me about this issue, so that I can get to the proper position. Okay, and this passage was what he brought. Okay, now what we will do is look at these passages. Okay, try to find out what the evil of the love of money is, but also what is the meaning and how do you get to contentment. Okay, and then we will look at these two passages that are quoted here. There are two passages. One's out of Psalm 118, and the other one is different places throughout the Bible. And what we want to do is pick these up and enlarge them so that they become stability zones, okay, places that you go to cause you to get this back into right perspective, okay, and find contentment, okay, and so that's essentially what you, what I want to try to do. And again, I hope I waken a little bit, because you have to really, most of us are aware of this, but if you are stable right this minute, and there isn't anything bothering you in terms of these kinds of things, then this is not a problem. But what I'm saying is that it could be a huge problem because basically everything rests on money. Okay? And the truth of the matter is all God has to do is move you to a position to where it's threatened or it's actually leaving. Okay? All of a sudden you realize that your relationship with God is not based all that great, okay, on the relationship with God. It's based upon your stability with what you have and what's going to get you through the future. Okay, now I don't know what the women are as much involved as the men, because as a man I have a real sense of this for my old family. Okay, and so, and I'm the one who deals with it. I'm the one that thinks about it and has to engage in it. My wife doesn't engage in it. You know, she tells me I want to know, and I start talking to her about it, and she's asleep in 5 minutes. You know, and she's, you know, yes, I want to know, I know, and she just zones out in about 30 seconds later. So essentially, you know, the guys more likely are having to deal with this in a much deeper manner in terms of their walk with God. Okay, well, let's take a look at it. The first sheet there that you have is verse 5. Yes?
I just wanted to ask a question. I notice all your verses are New Testament verses. Can you think of any incident or opportunity in the Old Testament? It seemed like that the Old Testament saints took having money, having prosperity as part of their
blessing
from mm-hmm. God. And it's like there's a whole different thing. This is one of the major changes between the Old Testament and New Testament. Do you see it that way too?
Yeah, well, yes. In other words, I think that we receive a far greater understanding about our own relationship with God through Jesus himself. And through Paul's writing, all the different things give us much more insight. But you can go into the Old Testament and find this whole issue of far, far greater than what you know. The whole book of Job is about it. I mean, the whole book is about it.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
What Job basically had was the same perspective as his three friends until he was hit. Okay. Then he realized he didn't have the right perspective, but he didn't have the answer either. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so he did not have the answer as to why is God taking all this away? I have done nothing. Why is he doing this? Okay, they said, I'm sinning. Okay, and Job said, I'm not sinning. Okay, so all I can do is complain to God and ask him to speak to me. And then, of course, at the end he does and helps give him insight as to how you handle this problem. Okay.
Well, he also gives him back.
Yes.
You know,
he does.
Everything he lost and more.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
He reaffirms that, yes, I'm blessing
yeah.
you.
That's right.
It's a positive.
Yeah.
But
yes, and these passages you find a greater view of this particular issue. So I think we do have a lot more insight in the New Testament as to how we go through that. Okay, most of us know that as you walk with God, even when you find yourself losing these things, If you're really finding yourself in the right position with the Lord, he's still taking care of you,
right.
Okay,
that's right.
In terms of what's going on. And so those are some of the principles that we learn. In fact, Matthew 16 is all about that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it says, do you not know that I love you even like I love the birds?
Right.
Okay, and so don't worry about those things. Okay, even if you get down to where you only have clothes and something over the roof of your head and food. If that's all you got enough, okay? And that's, see, you know, those are the kinds of things that you find that are a little bit more defined, okay? All right, well, let's take a look at this sheet that I have, the first sheet there, love of money versus contentment, verse 5. I do not get down to verse 6, so we're just in verse 5, okay? Again, the word let, if you notice it's used in several different places in this passage. The very first verse says let, the fourth verse says let, and verse 5 says let. Okay, let is a conscious decision. Okay, it's addressing the problem. Okay, it's realizing this is what I need to do, and then you do it. Okay, so the word let is a lot stronger than just, you know, let. Okay, it is like a command. Okay, address the issue, see the issue, and do something about it. Okay, make a conscious effort to move. Okay, that's the word let. So if you've got a problem in this area, and you hear it in this room, and God speaks to your voice, and you walk out of the room, and you do nothing, then you have let it not be. Okay, you have not addressed it. Okay, and that's what the word let is. Let love continue. Let your character not be broken by your lust or your misunderstanding of what the love of your wife is and what that means to you. And honor it. Okay, don't defile it. Let that happen. Okay, so that's what's being said. Don't let the love of money be the security base of your life. Okay, let contentment and your relationship with God be the security base of your life. Okay, now, again, as long as that security base in money is there, you know, my sense inside is that I still haven't got this right yet. And I've got to do something about it. I've got to not let money be my security base. Okay, I've got to work at this and find an answer to this. Okay, and really, when God put his hand on that just 2 months ago, put his hand on it, and he says, okay, now you got it. What are you going to do with it? And I go, I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I may lose it. Okay, and God turns right around and he says, that's your problem. I gave it to you. Okay, and if I want to take it away, I'll take it away. Okay, you didn't earn it. Okay, I gave it to you. And so those are the things that you're dealing with. And the question here is will I address it? Okay, will I do something to take care of it in terms of my own spiritual life to where this is not the basis of who I am and I can be content in the loss? Okay, and that's really the big issue. Okay, and so that's essentially what I had to come to inside my mind, because I was definitely not content. Even the question caused me to be discontent. Nothing had happened. You know, all you had to do is raise the question. You go, I don't know. You know, and nothing had happened. Okay, so it just lets your character. Okay, your character. Notice the character is a big issue throughout this whole thing. Okay? Your character has to do with how you honor the issue of marriage. Okay? That is the definite kind of a way of defining who you are. Okay? That is your character. Your character is really who you are. You can have a bad character or a good character. Okay? It's who you are. Both your mind and your spirit and your choosing, your will, okay, your actions, that is your character. Okay, and so it's not something that is static. It's constantly moving, your character is. Okay, and so it defines what you really are, okay, in terms of your choices and what you believe. Okay. And so in this particular case is, let it be free. I am way, way far from being free. This disquiets me, money. I am very, very far from being free. Okay? And I just tell you that honestly. I've struggled with it all my life. I think Americans struggle with it all their lives. Okay? People who are poor, and they're poor, and they're poor, and they're not going to get any better than poor. Okay, sometimes they struggle with it mightily because they deeply want it. But if I've had students who have gone down to Mexico, and people who live in the garbage dumps, they actually make their houses in the garbage dumps. And they've run across Christians who live in these garbage dumps. And the one thing my students say is, these people are more content and happy about life than I am. You can't, almost without variation, when they come back and they go into that kind of experience, the first thing they say is, they're happy and they're content. Okay? And I guarantee you, I wouldn't be happy or content. Okay. And so that's essentially something that I have to look at, okay, in relationship to my own heart. Okay. All right. So let your character be free. Free from the love of money. Okay. All right. So that's a part of what you see from there. This paragraph, six, is probably about as far as we'll get this morning. Well, maybe we get through seven too. This is some statements that have been given from different commentaries that have tried to define what contentment is, okay, spiritual contentment. A perfect condition in life which no aid or support is needed. Now, when they mean no aid or support is needed, that means that aid and support has come to you from God and you don't need anything else. Okay. What they call that, Ryrie calls it self-sufficiency, and you would think that's a bad word. Okay, now that's not a bad word when you connect it to God himself. God himself is your total sufficiency, thus you are self-sufficient. Okay, you don't need anything else except God. Okay, if you're self-sufficient, totally self-sufficient, then essentially all you need is you. Okay. But that's not what it's referring here to, okay? All right. The contentment of which the Bible speaks is essentially inner-directed and is centrally an acceptance of God's ministrations as these affect one's station, task, and one's resources in life. Now, those are three things. What you do is accept, okay? You accept deep down in your soul where God has placed you, okay, the position you're in right this minute. You accept it, okay, and it is his choice to put you there. It's his choice, not your choice, his choice. And you submit and you accept it, okay, and it has to do with your resources, which happens to do with money, but it also resources has to do with your own mental, physical health, and everything that's a part of you. Okay, all your resources. Okay, the task, I think this is one of the things that really concerns me more than anything, okay, is it, as I get older, what's going to happen about what I'm going to do? Okay, I'm about to retire, okay, from teaching and whatever. Many of you have had to deal with this issue already. Okay, inside, My mind is what task am I going to do? And there's an enormous disquieting in my soul, okay, as to how I'm going to finish this thing, okay, finish my life, okay. So you can say, well, I can teach you. I teach 6 days a week, and the seventh day I prepare. You know, I prepare all days, but the seventh day I have to prepare for you guys. That's Saturday, okay, Friday and Saturday. And so essentially, I'm constantly, I mean, all day long, I'm getting ready for what I just did and then what I'm going to do the next day. Okay? And so that's essentially what you do. So I don't know how to really deal with that. I've been doing that for 30-something years. I don't know what I'm going to do if I have to quit. But at the same time, I'm worn out. Okay? In terms of that. But that's the task. What task is he going to choose? Okay? Can I be content within it? Okay, these are the resources, and it's his ministration, his taking me day by day. Ministration means the actual activity of an administrator. It's not just that he's the administrator and he chose it, but he's actually moving it and making it happen. And you're going, I don't want to go that way, you know, that kind of thing. Okay. And again, your station in life, okay, your position, okay. Everybody in this room has had their station changed, okay. I used to be the head of a cattle farm, okay, a big organization, and I loved it. And God chose for me to get out of it, and I didn't want to get out of it, but he chose for me to get out of it, okay. And so that's essentially what that's talking about. Okay, and so as you go along, he chooses, and then if you find yourself in a position that you don't like, then that you're discontent. Okay, and those are the things that you have to adjust. You have to get before God and find a way to find out how to be content in relationship to these things. Okay, and so that's what it's talking about. It is thus a settled disposition to regard God's gifts as sufficient. It is a settled disposition that is caused by your regarding God's gifts as sufficient for your day. Most of us are not settled on this issue at all. Okay, the gifts of God are not enough. That's the discontentment. The gifts of God are not enough because you are not settled with it. Okay, it's a very good phrase. Okay, it is a state of mind and heart which arises out of grace-induced awareness that underneath our lives are the everlasting arms of a heavenly Father who cares for us and who, if we but obey, will show us every good. Supporting this contentment is a firm belief. In other words, how does this happen? Okay, it is a firm, settled belief on this issue. A firm, settled belief in a wise and loving God. You have come to a firm, settled belief in a wise who can run this thing, okay? A wise and loving Father. That's the firm belief, okay? A deep-seated willingness to make to be made serviceable in any way that God chooses to the ends of his kingdom. Okay? Anyway, you know, I think my father, at the end, he was willing in a way. I think my mother was willing in a way. But I would say that's probably their greatest struggle they had. They had been used by God so mightily for so long, okay, that when all of a sudden this began to disappear, in other words, they were moved out of those positions, okay, that it was very, very difficult sometimes for them to accept that. Okay. They did it in grace, but they battled it. I think Mom battled it worse, okay, and that's just a part. It's a new phase. They had to battle this, what this was talking about. Okay? That God in his love and his wisdom had basically moved them into a different spot. Okay? I would say one of the questions for my father was, he had been given such high positions and such high things, and for him to go down to secondary was a very, very difficult issue. Okay, I'm not saying that. Okay, and all I'm saying is that is something that most of us deal with. Okay, and it's a fact of life. And God seems to want us to do this, and we better find a way of believing that this is wise and good and acceptable. Okay, and find ourselves somehow in service to God and his kingdom. Okay, because otherwise you're not content. Okay, in terms of what your life is. So this is essential. It's a very, very well developed paragraph on contentment. I've never seen any better. Okay, in relationship to what it is. Okay, I'm not going to be here next week. I am going to be grading, which I have to deal with discontent. And can't believe how many things I have to grade. It's at least 300 pieces of paper.
Oh.
You know? That's right. That's right. Exactly right. Yeah, that's right. I have to go back over and over. This is not a settled issue. Okay. And I think Bob Tester told me, "Are you going to be finished next week?"
No.
Well, he said he was. That's what he said. Okay, Larry doesn't think so. But if that's true, we'd be back over the other room. Yeah, that's right. All right. Okay, we'll see you guys.